school closures, layoffs, sickness, and lockdowns. We're facing unprecedented restrictions and hardships, uncertainty and frustration. As it is so often the case in times of crisis, the stories of everyday folks doing extraordinary things to help their communities aren't rare. It is inspiring so many people are coming forward to help, and that's how we're going to beat this back. How well we succeed will be measured by how well we handle the adversity. Today is May the 6th, 2020. I'm Hank Key and my colleague is Joe King. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. Do you know who has your personal data? Do you know how Facebook, Google, Amazon, and other big tech companies are using your personal data? Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on prn.fm, on the Internet, and pcradioshow.org. To listen to the live program on the telephone each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the number is 641-793-7091. You can leave us a message with your question or comments at hank@pcradioshow.org. There is Windows 10, and there will be Windows 10X. Codename is Santorini. Windows 10X is an upcoming version of Windows 10, specifically designed to power foldable PCs and dual-screen laptops. Basically, it's going to be the operating system for such Windows-based devices. Will Windows 10X replace Windows 10? No. Windows 10X is not designed to be a replacement of Windows 10, and it won't be possible to upgrade from Windows 10 to 10X. 10X will become a Chrome OS competitor. Microsoft announced that some substantial changes were being made regarding the development of Windows 10X. The May 2020 update is going to accelerate innovation in Windows 10 to ensure that Windows devices are the best way to work, learn, and play, and with that increased focus comes a shift in priorities for Windows 2. The world is a very different place than it was last October when Microsoft shared their vision for a new category of dual-screen Windows devices. Microsoft is leveraging the power of the cloud, and they believe the time is right to lean into the acceleration in a different way. With Windows 10X, it is designed for flexibility, and that flexibility is to pivot their focus towards single-screen Windows 10X devices that leverage the power of the cloud to help their customers to work, learn, and play in new ways. These simple screen devices will be the first expression of Windows 10X. So what does this statement mean? Simply put, in light of the coronavirus and the changes that have happened to the way we work, Microsoft has changed their approach regarding Windows 10X. Originally designed for dual-screen devices, Windows 10X will now be available on regular laptops just like Windows 10. Microsoft isn't saying exactly when single-screen devices like laptop will support Windows 10X, nor when dual-screen devices will launch with the OS. However, Windows 10X will launch on single-screen devices first. Microsoft is reprioritizing Windows 10X for laptops and single-screen devices because of the coronavirus pandemic. The software maker has seen a 75% year-over-year increase in the time spent in Windows 10. More people are turning to use their laptops or PC instead of a smartphone or tablet during the lockdowns that we've seen worldwide to work or study. Two versions of Windows 10 for laptops? Microsoft is not yet explicitly defining what Windows 10X will have now that this change has been announced, and we will probably learn more at the Build conference. However, if it's a more simple and modular form of Windows 10, it makes sense that this could be a lower-cost Google Chrome OS competitor. Anyone who has kids in school can see the enormous success that Google have had with Chrome and their Chromebooks. This could be a very interesting development. Stay tuned for more news about this. Has the coronavirus impacted Microsoft's business? The short answer is no. Microsoft reports increased PC demand during coronavirus and minimal impact on revenue. The Surface and Xbox are both flat during the recent quarter. Microsoft posted the third quarter of its 2020 financial results, and all eyes are on the early impact of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. The company is reporting revenue of $35 billion and a net income of $10.8 billion. Revenue is up 15%. Net income jumped 22%. And Microsoft says COVID-19 had minimal net impact on the total company revenue. Microsoft does note that the final weeks of the quarter, which ended March 31st, there was a slowdown in transactional licensing, particularly in small and medium businesses, and a reduction in advertising spent in LinkedIn. Windows had been a surprising bright spot thanks to an increase in PC demand, but Microsoft has clearly struggled with supply constraints in China for both Surface and lower-end OEM PCs. The pandemic has obviously boosted remote working, and Microsoft has benefited through its Office business and cloud offerings. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella said they've seen 2 years' worth of digital transformation in 2 months, from remote teamwork and learning to sales and customer service to critical cloud infrastructure and security. There certainly has been an increased demand for Windows PCs during the pandemic for both work-related activities and students trying to learn from home. Windows OEM Pro revenue grew by 5%, thanks to increased demand to support remote work and learn scenarios. Some of this demand increase was offset by supply issues in China, though nonprofit revenue declined by 10%, though, as Microsoft continues to see strong competition for lower-priced devices and supply constraints in China. Microsoft is expected to unveil new Surface Book 3 and Surface Go 2 devices in May, and rumors also suggest the company is ready to launch its Surface Buds and potentially an update to the Surface Dock. Microsoft has not yet announced any Surface hardware event for May, but given the pandemic, any hardware unveils will be online either way. Xbox and gaming were both strong for Microsoft this time of year, and recent reports have suggested console spending has increased during the pandemic. Microsoft says overall gaming revenues declined 1% this quarter, with Xbox content and services increasing by just 2% despite increased engagement during stay-at-home orders. Satya Nadella did surprise with some new Xbox numbers during an earnings call with investors. Xbox Pass has hit 10 million subscribers, and Xbox Live has nearly 90 million monthly active users. These are both very impressive figures, and it's the first time Microsoft has provided Xbox Game Pass numbers. Like most of Microsoft revenue quarters, the real growth comes from the company's cloud and office divisions. Office commercial products and cloud service revenue increased 13%, and even office consumer products and cloud services revenue increased 15%, with Office 365 consumer subscriptions hitting almost 40 million subscribers. Microsoft Teams usage has also hit 75 million daily active users, up 70% in just 1 month. Nadella also noted that Microsoft saw 200 million meeting participants in a single day early this month, a figure that brings Teams closer to Zoom's 200 million daily meeting participants. And with the problems that Zoom is having, many corporations have decided to use Teams because it is more secure. Lenovo will start offering ThinkPads with Linux pre-installed. The OEM Linux Club grows larger. In context, the world's biggest PC company in terms of shipments has decided to offer a few select models with Linux pre-installed. In doing so, it joins the existing club that includes Dell and other smaller players offering Linux. If Linux has a special place in your heart, you would want to know Lenovo is partnering with Fedora Project to give you your dream machine in the form of ThinkPad laptops to make it easy even for a newcomer to get started with Fedora. By the way, Fedora is the consumer version of Red Hat. Why Fedora? There are many Linux distros available. Simple. You may remember Lenovo was a spin-off from IBM, and IBM has since taken over Red Hat. Ah, now you see the connection. This is supposed to be a pilot program dubbed Linux Community Series Fedora Edition, which will include the ThinkPad P1 Gen 2, ThinkPad X1 Gen 8, ThinkPad P53, with the possibility that the company will expand the selection in the near future if it sees enough demand. These models will come with a newly released Fedora 32 workstation, Linux pre-installed, and will presumably be certified to play nice with it while only using first-party repositories. That means the ThinkPad P53 and the ThinkPad P1 Gen 2 will come with NVIDIA drivers installed by default. However, that's easy to fix by downloading them from proprietary sources. I would have thought that Ubuntu would be a prime candidate at this point, given that Dell already has had a lot of success with XPS 13 Developer Edition over the last few years. Lenovo's announcement does seem to hint at the possibility, and the main advantage of going the route is that Canonical offers a separate long-term support, that's LTS, version that is refreshed every 2 years, as supported for 5 years after release, which is about as much the average laptop lifespan. Still, there's strong smell of missed opportunity here, especially since we know nothing about price and availability for those Fedorized ThinkPads. AMD has shown it can pack a lot of power into a mobile CPU with its Ryzen 4000 series, and it would have been interesting to see Lenovo announce at least one Fedorized ThinkPad with something like a Ryzen 4800H CPU. $14.53 million college students in the United States are enrolled in public colleges, and 5.12 million students are enrolled in private colleges. In a 2019 Open Doors report on international educational exchange, international students make up 5.5% of the total U.S. higher education population. That means that about 1 million of them are foreign students. Coronavirus has caused virtually all colleges and universities to have students take online courses, and how effective is it? In a recent Forbes report on the financial health of private not-for-profit colleges finds that the overall financial well-being of colleges has deteriorated and many are in danger of closing or merging. Projections come from the latest survey of college students and would-be college students and does not consider community colleges or foreign students. Figures are particularly bleak for minority students. Colleges could lose 20% of students. Four-year colleges may face a loss of up to 20% in the fall enrollment, and Simpson Scarborough, a higher education research and marketing company, has predicted on the basis of multiple student surveys it has conducted. The findings are based on surveys of more than 2,000 college-bound high school seniors, and current college students in March, just after the coronavirus began spreading in the United States, and in April, after 3 weeks of record unemployment claims. The findings are based on several surveys, one of which was released previously. 10% of college-bound seniors who had planned to enroll at a four-year college before the COVID-19 outbreak have already made alternative plans. 14% of college students said they were unlikely to return to their current college or university in the fall, or it was too soon to tell. Exactly 3 weeks later, in mid-April, that figure has gone up to 26%. Gap years may be gaining in popularity. While hard to track, there are estimates that 3% of freshmen take a gap year. Since the pandemic, internet searches for gap years have skyrocketed. College students do not like the online education they have been receiving. To finish their degree, 85% want to go back to campus, but 15% want to finish online. The numbers are particularly bleak for minority students. 41% of minority high school seniors says it's likely they won't go to college at all in the fall, or it's too soon to say. That compares to 24% of white high school seniors. With deadlines looming, some colleges expect answers to admissions offer by May 1, although many have delayed the date. 24% of minority students said they haven't decided which college to attend. The number for white students is 14%. Because of COVID-19, the top choice of college has changed for a third of undecided minority students, but only 15% of undecided white students. Minority students who are in college are also feeling the impact of COVID-19 and related matters more than white students. 32% of minority students and 22% of white college students said it was unlikely they will return to their college this fall, or it's too soon to say. Nearly two-thirds of minority students, that's 64%, said their plans were being affected by COVID-19 compared to 44% of white students. Some colleges will fare better. The Simpson-Scarborough report says, based on prestige or location or particularly sensitive administrators, but as a whole, the effect on higher education enrollment could be catastrophic. Simpson-Scarborough said that they felt that their first survey that they couldn't make predictions because COVID-19 had just spread in the United States and most students and more colleges weren't prepared for it. But having surveyed again after a full month with COVID-19, the results were mostly the same, or from colleges' perspective, worse. By combining the various factors, they came up with a 20% figure for decrease enrollment. Obviously, there's a giant what-if to consider, but most of the what-ifs that colleges hope for, what if a vaccine were developed, aren't going to happen by the fall. Simpson-Scarborough strongly advised colleges to start talking with their students about the various scenarios they face. She noted that they should try to figure out which of those scenarios they're embracing and talk to students. Simpson-Scarborough is not the only recent survey, and other surveys, while some take different approaches, have the same overall tone. Titan Partners recently surveyed parents and found many of them are dubious of paying full tuition rates for continuation of online education in the fall. Lipman Hearn last week released a new survey of parents of high school seniors conducted in March and in April. Lipman Hearn found that the April parents were more likely to want their children to go to college close to home, 52% versus 45%, and it found that 56% of parents were interested in the delayed January start, and 46% said they wanted their child to start a less expensive institution and then transfer. And 61% believe online instruction of the sort started by the colleges this spring will reduce the quality of higher education. Art and Science Group polled 1,171 high school seniors from April 21st through the 24th and found that 1 in 6 students who plan to attend four-year colleges full-time no longer wants to do so. A principal with the group said further numbers show that 60% of students have no interest in online education, and two-thirds of students think that they should pay much less for tuition if the programs they have been shifted to in recent weeks should continue in the next academic year. David Hawkins, Executive Director for Educational and Content and Policy of the National Association for College Admission Counseling, said such surveys serve a valuable purpose. At a time when information is at a premium, surveys like this can be useful in helping colleges plan for an uncertain future. Of course, survey research has limitations in that it tends to rely on snapshot in time, so responses today may change substantially based on new information or events in the future. Colleges will have to conduct outreach to their own population of students to assess the pandemic's impact on fall enrollment as changes are bound to vary by institution. But as a general indicator that times will be difficult moving forward, these surveys are sending messages to colleges and to policymakers that this crisis might put college out of reach for a large number of students. Overall, the primary effect that's being considered for both students and institution is financial. The COVID-19 outbreak seems likely to result in an economic downturn that rivals or outpaces the 2008 recession, absent a significant infusion of public assistance from state and federal governments. That will affect students' ability to enroll and colleges' ability to maintain service for students. With college costs rising at such a rapid rate, many are questioning the wisdom of college as a future. Presenting Benjamin Rockwell with his IT Pro series, Setting Boundaries When Working Remote.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get to business. This is where I give you my various amount of tidbits. This is my current and past experience of being an IT professional. I've been in the business now for 30 years. And some of what I'm going to cover right now is not so much technology as it is working, as it is dealing with the day-to-day life. And some of these things you may have heard from me, and some of these may be brand new. So I'm going to go through the biggest issues, and that is what we are dealing with. If you are working via remote, I want you to know that there are some tips that are there for you, and I want to encapsulate these all in one spot. First and foremost, we have merged the office and home. And we have done it in such a way that, there are going to be throughout our various lives, and maybe this is something that's going to be easing up. Maybe this is something that's going to come back again. We don't know. We cannot predict the future. And hopefully you've overcome this first one. And that is kids and family will happen. If you are an employee, understand that your boss is understanding of this. They hopefully have a family. They have a family life. They understand that things are going to be a little bit crazy. If you're a boss and you don't have a family, if you were hatched alone from an egg and just presented into the office as a fully grown adult, I have no idea. My mind goes in weird places at times. Please do remember, the kids are going to happen. Kids are unpredictable. There are so many different TV shows that are based off of kids will say the craziest things. So, yeah. If you're an employee, if you're a boss, I want you to start the day right by getting dressed as you would for the office. And this goes all the way throughout your business day. Do not show up. I will grant you one thing. Those little fuzzy slippers, I've got like little bear paw slippers. I wear those. They keep my feet nice and toasty. They're comfy and they're relaxing. I skip on the shoes. That's it. The rest of me is all dressed up the exact same way that I go to the office. And the reason for this, yes, I could be called upon to turn on my webcam at any moment. It hasn't happened yet. I have had many web conferences. None of them involved my being on camera. And that's okay. But it gets you into that right frame of mind. It gets you into a work attitude. It makes sure that you understand, that the world understands, that you are at work. You're continuing your professionalism as if little has happened in the world. Yes, I know a lot has happened. Our minds are a little bit distracted, but bear with me here. I do want you to, just as you do in the office, set a schedule, establish your availability, and establish your hours. This is something that is so important. You want to accomplish a number of things throughout the day. You want to accomplish the things that need to happen to keep your job, to keep your department going, to keep the company going. So we put it all together, and you gotta, this is, of all times, this is a time to really buckle down and make sure you are, whatever form you're utilizing, you're setting your tasks and you're accomplishing them. You're making goals for the day, for the week, for the month, for the morning, for the afternoon. And you're keeping them, or keeping most of them, and you're readjusting to all of these priorities to make sure things get done. If you take a lunch break, or I'm sorry, if you take a break, we most all of us do take a lunch. You take a morning break, you take an afternoon break. Maybe it's just a water cooler thing. You know, you spend 10 minutes chatting with somebody for over something that's outside of it. Yeah, I want you to keep that up. Utilize whatever chat tool you guys are using, whether it's Skype or Slack or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Utilize that for just a few minutes in the morning, in the afternoon. Make sure you're getting your cup of tea. I drink tea. Many people drink coffee. Whatever it is, keep the standard practice. Whatever you did at the office, do it at home. As far as breaks, as far as staying hydrated. As a matter of fact, right now maybe even is a better time for you to start focusing on hydration. You've got a nice water filter at home, your Brita. Let's use that. Make sure you take those breaks at a regular time. Make sure you take your lunch at a regular time. I also want you to keep your office neat and presentable. If you go on webcam, you go on to a Skype or a Zoom or whatever it is, WebEx, and people are seeing your office, they should see something that's professional. And if it's professional, if your office area is professional, you are also going to think of work as professional. And that really leads into, I want you to have a separate space for it, but that's another story. Most of all, just as I'm coming to the end of the segment, I want you to also realize, be aware when you are coming to the end of your normal work day, and I want you to end your day. I want you to separate it. I want you to be apart from it, because now you have to go and do the other part of life, which is remember why you're working so hard. Go spend time with the family. Spend time hugging your loved ones, playing games with them, and just enjoy being with them. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. There are surveys and there are surveys, and how do you know they're legit? Well, there was a survey done by West Wind, and I said, the results were interesting, but who the heck is West Wind? West Wind conducted a research study of traffic data and consumers from the United States, United Kingdom, Australia, Japan, and Russia. And I just wasn't familiar with the company West Wind. Did I get a surprise when I did a search on it? West Wind, formerly known as Microsoft Online MSN China, West Wind is a certified marketing and advertising partner of Baidu, Tencent, WeChat, Sina Weibo, and more major digital platforms in China. To understand the effects of COVID-19 on the consumer behavior, tech-driven cross-border marketing company West Wind, taking an international perspective, categorized observable changes into three main areas: what people are buying, what people are doing during this quarantine period, and where people are looking for information. The first, what are people buying? The changes in consumer habits as a result of COVID-19 have been observed differently in different countries around the world. Aside from the obvious increase in purchases of face masks, hand sanitizer, and other healthcare products, canned and long-life food products have also been purchased in bulk. For Western countries, essential foods such as soy-based products increased 63%, rice 58%, chickpeas 47%, and milk powder 126%. And yes, people do buy water. Water increased in sales 42%, and canned meats, that sounds like spam, increased 58%, saw month-on-month increases. Japan saw a similar increase on long-life foods, with 10 times increase in the sale of frozen foods, and 550% spike in sales of garlic and black garlic, a key ingredient of immune-boosting black garlic and honey drink, rising more than 20%. And these increases happen alongside a severe shortage of toilet paper in Australia. What were people doing, or what are they doing today during this lockdown period? With the temporary closure of non-essential businesses around the world, many people are adjusting to a life of reduced mobility. This new life entails more home cooking, so they'd be interested in kitchen utensils, gadgets, shelving. Sales increased by 700%, 321%, and 210%, respectively, in China alone. Exercising, enjoying digital entertainment, and spending time with family and friends also have increased. For many, the desire for companionship has resulted in them choosing to own a pet. This has led to a tenfold increase in the number of pets being adopted from animal shelters in New York, and many shelters reporting an unprecedented lack of available pets. According to Westwind Global Search traffic data, in addition to pet trainer equipment and other supplies, smart home supplies such as auto cleaning robots and dishwashing machines are also being purchased. Since consumers are spending more at home and are willing to invest in a more comfortable living environment. Meanwhile, HDMI cables and projectors to turn living rooms into home theaters also saw a spike in sales. So where are people? The final significant change is the way in which people search and the channels they use to access information. Leading the pack for official pandemic-related information is, believe it or not, official government websites, respected media outlets, and Instagram. Respondents in some regions also reported accessing the official WHO website, that's the World Health Organization website, or Apple News. Social media has seen a spike of usage with short video platform TikTok reporting a total of 5.5 billion views relating to coronavirus as of March 2020. This number is reflected in the dominance of short video platforms in China, recording a 5.5% year-on-year increase and overtaking mobile games as the most consumed media during the Chinese New Year holiday. As consumers adjust to life at home, the role and adoption of online shopping around the world is changing. These changes represent enormous opportunities for brands to open new markets, particularly for online services such as office and online education and e-commerce applications. There will be a new normalcy when the coronavirus crisis ends. Nothing will be the same when corporate America goes back to the office. COVID-19 is a game changer in that there will be new work rules for everyone. Office space is going to change, and we will go back to putting shields between people. This is one of the many kinds of changes that are going to have to be addressed in the future. We have to take the fear away from people. This will probably be the first time offices will have to be designed around health factors. Instead of the old office cubicles separating desks, there probably will be clear partitions. You will not sit there in that big open space. Workers are going to want protection, plexiglass or whatever. There will also be more teleconferencing and absolutely less flying, and you will be teleconferencing with customers. It is likely that more companies will continue to allow employees to work from home if it's possible, and perhaps even prefer that they do, which could also reduce costs for brick and mortar. Many industries, as possible, will continue to work at home, and the companies will get better as to how to manage it. That's good for a lot of reasons. It's good for health, it's good for people, and those who may have family obligations like small children. 15 years ago, companies were cool to the concept of working from home, in part because they did not have the tools to deal with remote work, and it was often reserved for special situations. We have to figure out what those rules are and how it works for each company. Maybe it's better for certain divisions than others. There will not be as many people willing to move around, and they will not be ready to jump on planes. Some industries are now being forced to use technology in ways mostly avoided so far. Doctors, for instance, who usually prefer seeing patients in person, it's moving towards telemedicine. The post-pandemic world is going to be changed in many ways that we can't yet foresee. I don't think we will know what this new normalcy is, and it will evolve over time. People are just going to have to go slow. Remote working has forced us to look at alternative computing platforms. In an attempt to reduce the spread of coronavirus, many millions of people are now working from home rather than commuting to offices. That has put huge pressure on technology teams to make working from home possible and has forced many of us to rethink the tools that we use. Foremost among those tools is the PC. The impact of remote working and the shifting of the classroom to online classes amplified the shortage of equipment once the coronavirus spread around the world. There was a sudden increase in demand for PCs as companies and consumers tried to get a hold of laptops for work, education, or entertainment at home. Once coronavirus-related lockdowns expanded to other regions, there were new sudden pockets of PC demand for remote workers and online classrooms that PC manufacturers just couldn't keep up with. A minor but interesting consequence seems to be an increased interest in PC alternatives. Whether because of lack of supply or simply because businesses and consumers have had to respond to changing circumstances with limited budgets. For example, the Raspberry Pi Foundation has noted that sales have rocketed during the coronavirus crisis, which it puts down to people buying the tiny computers and battles over the single home PC during lockdown. The latest Raspberry Pi might be a little tiny device, but it's powerful enough to take on the role of budget computer if it need be. Chromebooks, which are slightly easier to work with, if you don't have the technical skills to play with a Raspberry Pi, have also been selling well. It's not only harassed parents looking for extra PCs that have been getting creative. Some have been digging up old laptops out of storage, putting Linux on them or otherwise lightening the operating system load, and sending them out to allow staff to work from home. An old or lower spec device is good enough for many employees, especially if your team only needs to access cloud-based tools and or virtual desktop services. It's been pointed out that without the option of using a wide range of cloud computing services, businesses would be in even more trouble. The same could be said about aging hardware that has been pressed back into service. None of this means the PC is obsolete. It's still the business workhorse. It's not the only option, though. It's far too early to tell how this will play out in the future. What very likely is that most of those staff who are now working from home will be there for some time to come, and even after the crisis has passed, remote working will be a bigger part of their lives than ever before. Many organizations, budgets permitting, in what is likely to be tough times ahead, will be looking to re-equip those home workers with better hardware, but some may look at the slimmed-down devices that they're using and decide that the days of the one-size-fits-all computing device has now passed. The make-do and mend attitude may continue. Companies that have kept their staff in offices will have to invest more in remote infrastructure, and consumers will long to upgrade their PCs, both developments that will create a steady long-range tailwind for PC and monitor markets. But it's also worth remembering that when it comes to the choice of computing devices, A few years back, it was the personal computer or the PC or nothing. Now we have a wide range of devices, from single-board computers to tablets that can fill in where the fully-fledged PC isn't needed or available, and we should celebrate the ingenuity of those people who are finding new ways of using technology to work, learn, or just to have fun. Marty Winston with All Hands on Tech, disbanding Wi-Fi bandwidth bandits.
Last time I said that this week's segment would be the one called You Got the Switch, where you could finally hear the rest of the story about all the motherboard hassles that were part of the retrofitting Frankenstein segment, but there has been yet one more delay. Hopefully not more than another week, and we'll put an end to that cliffhanger. Really, really about time. Coming up now, a segment I call Disbanding Wi-Fi Bandwidth Bandits. And speaking of bands, Maestro? Following a long period of sheltering at home, there are a lot of people who seem sure that the term internet speed is an oxymoron. Opposites. That you can have the internet, but it will never have any speed, or that if you manage to get some speed, it's probably not through the internet. Are they right? Are they wrong? Well, both. Let's divide the issue into two connections. One of those is the internet bandwidth that your provider brings to the wall, the outside internet. Sometimes that's called the WAN, W-A-N, an acronym for Wide Area Network. For the next few minutes, it will be simpler to just think of it as the internet outside. As a rule, most of you are getting typically 100 megabits per second of bandwidth there. Some of you are getting more. So why the spinning hourglasses every time you try to watch something online? That's the inside internet, the internet inside your walls. And what do you bet that most of the complaints about bad internet speeds are people using devices that don't have Ethernet ports? Does your phone have an Ethernet port? Your tablet? Didn't think so. A lot of people do get relatively slow internet speeds, maybe 20 megabits tops, and that's on a good day. Right now, they're getting less. Lots less. There's a reason for it, and a cure for it. One that won't add a penny to your monthly provider fees. That's not to say it will be absolutely free. It's just a buy-once thing that you'll probably be thrilled to do. If only there were so fast and complete a cure for COVID-19, right? The challenge with the internet inside is that there are at least two places where slowdowns can happen. Do you like metaphors? Think of a revolving door. If that revolving door weren't there, you could just walk through that extra wide doorway and arrive unencumbered. The big open doorway represents the scope of internet bandwidth coming through the wall. Put a revolving door in that doorway and less gets through. You've reduced its bandwidth. Your smartphone or your tablet and maybe other devices are also putting up with a reduced bandwidth just because they connect over Wi-Fi. A typical Wi-Fi connection will cut what might be 100 megabits at the wall to 20 or so at the device, and less if the Wi-Fi signal is at less than full strength. But that's only part of it. Stick with the revolving door for another minute. What happens if instead of just you trying to get through that door, 20 other people are trying to get through that door at the same time? Chances are it will slow down all of you. And for a lot of people, the same thing is happening to Wi-Fi, only for some of them, it gets really bad. Here are some things about Wi-Fi that some of you know and some of you may not. There are two places on the radio spectrum where you can see Wi-Fi equipment. The original one is around 2.4 gigahertz. The more recent edition is around 5 gigahertz. The low band, around 2.4 gigahertz, because it's at a lower frequency, tends to cover a slightly longer range, which also means that at any given distance, it has slightly more signal strength and slightly more sensitivity. That's one piece of the puzzle. The high band, around 5 gigahertz, has more ability to adapt to afford higher bandwidth to a device that electronically requests more bandwidth, which is probably not your smartphone. Every router covers the low band. Only newer routers, and in this sense, new is already several years old, well, only the newer routers are dual band. And there's something about low-band routers that can help explain why things may get slow for you. In the U.S., low-band routers force everybody onto one of three available channels, Channel 1, or Channel 6, or Channel 11. And that's another piece of the puzzle. Yes, there are other channels, but they would overlap these, and they'd all end up just interfering with each other. So if you only have a low-band router, and if any significant number of your neighbors have low-band-only routers, all of you are sharing just three channels. Did you catch that word? Sharing. Meaning that everybody gets through, but the total speed of the channel gets divided among you. And no, you're not sharing the top potential speed of maybe 20 megabits. Remember, the low-band signal spreads itself out a little wider, but the farther you get from the router, the weaker the signal gets. Try it. Count your bars. And the weaker the signal gets, the more that automatic data communication error correction asks for questionable packets to be resent. So, in addition to all the neighbors who may be sharing that same channel, well, many of you are also sharing that channel with your own error correction retransmissions. Fun, huh? Maybe it's time to swap that old router for something newer. Dual band for sure, but what else? Here are some things to consider. If you live in an up and down place with not so much of a horizontal area, a simple router may be enough. When you shop, check out the square feet of coverage that they claim. Multiply that by, maybe 3/4 and see if that fits your space. Some routers have so many antennas that they look like dead spiders, and antennas do play a role in slightly more efficient signal paths. Check the buyer reviews. Maybe the best approach of all for spread-out houses is to go with one of the mesh Wi-Fi systems. Here's how they work. There are multiple units. You might see 2 or 3 or 5-unit kits more than others. The individual units often look like each other. They don't just carry Wi-Fi traffic. They also have a back-channel radio link among themselves. They all cooperatively present the same network name, the same SSID, and the same password. And they can do that across a collection of channels. Such systems can steer their signal sensitivity and signal strength to the parts of your home that need them the most right now. In a sense, they track where your gear is and work hard to keep you connected. Well, there are some little gotchas. For one, if you have smart home things that use Wi-Fi, a mesh network may steer the signals away from them in order to get to things like a smartphone or tablet. The best cure for that is to choose a mesh system with more nodes, and most will let you buy an add-on node anytime later. Some of those mesh nodes also have wired Ethernet ports and can act as bridges, so you can plug your TV or Roku or whatever into that wired connection that also links over Wi-Fi. Also note, if you're at a location that already has wired Ethernet, many models can use that as their interconnection to the mesh, meaning a pass-along port to where it had plugged in. Spend some time investigating mesh Wi-Fi products. They're intriguing. No matter what new router you get, try to get one that also offers one or more wired Ethernet ports. The router gets a wired WAN connection from the modem, so its added LAN connections can connect a nearby PC or notebook at the full speed your ISP delivers, and doing that, it doesn't occupy any of your home's Wi-Fi bandwidth. Also, no matter what new router you get, make sure you have a small UPS, a backup power source, for powering both that router and the modem. So even if your power fails and your home goes dark, your link to the outside world can stay alive. Okay, recap time. When you see really slow data rates while trying to work or study from home, your Wi-Fi router may be to blame. You can replace that router without adding a penny to your monthly internet service costs. And a well-chosen router can dramatically boost your Wi-Fi connection speed. And now you know why. Next time, if they finally get us a fully functional motherboard, you'll hear Igor, the Switch, and the final chapter in our retrofitting Frankenstein report, including word of a sweet drive cage upgrade. If that doesn't come in time, AccuWeather is helping pull together a 6-month power reliability forecast, looking at the potential causes of power failures region by region, plus some tips on what to trust and what not to trust when trying to fend off power problems. You can call that segment Weather Weaves Power Utility Fragility, or maybe even better, Plug Loco. Be here. You're powerless to resist.
Thank you, Morty. This coming Friday is May the 8th. It is the 75th anniversary marking the end of World War II in Europe. Even though 16 million Americans fought in the Second World War, the number of veterans from the conflict still alive today are failing quickly. According to the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, just 389,000 are still alive today. We salute them for their services. This coming Sunday is May 10th. It's Mother's Day. This will be their first virtual Mother's Day. The greatest gift you can give to your mother is just tell her that you love her and you're going to give her a big virtual hug. At this point in the program, we generally make public service announcements of computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. The computer clubs have random access sessions at each of these club meetings. If you have any questions or need for technical assistance, the club members are more than happy to assist. All these club meetings are open, free to the public. However, at this time, because of the coronavirus stay-at-home order, all the computer clubs have canceled their meetings. You can go to our website, pcradioshow.org. We have the computer clubs listed, and if you go to the website, you can check when they do schedule a meeting, and some of them are holding remote virtual meetings, so you may be interested in following up on them. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on prn.fm on the Internet and pcradioshow.org. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups and heed the guidance of staying at home. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King, Michael Horowitz, Marty Winston, and Benjamin Rockwell, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy, and remember, keep 6 feet apart. And if it's less than 6 feet, just back up, back up, back up. And until we meet again, same time, same station next week. In a few minutes at 7 p.m., join your neighbors and shout out into the streets your thanks and support for all the first responders, the nurses, the doctors, the EMT workers, the firemen, the policemen, the workers who maintain the supply of food, and all those who have to remain on the job to maintain essential services.